Welcome to episode 292 of the Intermittent Fasting Podcast. If you want to burn fat, gain energy, and enhance your health by changing when you eat, not what you eat, with no calorie counting, then this show is for you. I'm Melanie Avalon, biohacker and author of What, When, Wine. Lose weight and feel great with paleo-style meals, intermittent fasting, and wine. And I'm here with my co-host, Cynthia Thurlow, nurse practitioner and author of Intermittent Fasting Transformation, the 45-day program for women to lose stubborn weight, improve hormonal health, and slow aging. For more on us, check out ifpodcast.com, melanieavalon.com, and cynthiathurlow.com. Please remember, the thoughts and opinions on this show do not constitute medical advice or treatment, and no doctor-patient relationship is formed. So, pour yourself a mug of black coffee, a cup of tea, or even a glass of wine, if it's that time, and get ready for the Intermittent Fasting Podcast. Hi, friends. So I'm sort of haunted by clothes. If you follow me on Instagram, you probably know that I love wearing all the new clothes all the time. And I know that that is not really sustainable and not good for the planet. That's why I am thrilled that there is now a way to get all of the clothes with none of the waste. And I'm going to tell you how you can get unlimited clothes with no waste for a month for free. That's right, I now have a website for both myself and you guys where you can get free unlimited clothes with free shipping, free exchanges, nonstop from all of the hottest brands, and it is so incredibly easy. It's called MelanieAvalon'sCloset.com. We have so many incredible brands, including my favorites like BCBG, Calvin Klein, and so many more. Think like 100 brands. There are so many options. And the way it works is when you get a subscription, you search through the clothes, pick what you want. They send it to you with fast, easy shipping. You wear it as long as you want. And then when you're ready for more clothes, you just drop it off in their prepackaged envelope and get your next round. It is so incredibly cool. They have multiple plans. The starter plan gives you two pieces at a time. Friends, I actually have a little secret hack. Don't tell them that I told you this. When you get your two pieces, you can actually immediately go into your account, click return, and they'll go ahead and send you the next two pieces. So technically, you can have four pieces at a time. You also have a cool virtual closet that you can keep stocked with everything you eventually want to order, so you never miss out. And if you really like something and want to keep it, you can opt to buy it at a massively discounted price. Friends, I'm obsessed. This is finally the answer to wearing all the clothes all the time with none of the waste. Oh, and of course, one of my major reservations was the cleaning compounds that they use on the clothes, because yes, it is dry cleaning, which normally makes me nervous, and they don't say this on the website, so I reached out to them, and I was like, hey, what's going on with the cleaning? What do you guys use? Because I can't promote this if it's just normal dry cleaning. And thankfully, they let me know that they do not use any detergents, fabric softeners, or chemicals that are harsh. Everything is professionally dry cleaned or laundered with detergents that are free from dyes and scents. It's all gentle and it uses low temperature cycles. So yes, we are good on that front as well. It is the coolest thing ever. And you can try it free for a month. Yes, completely free. Just go to MelanieAvalon'sCloset.com to sign up. Free clothes for a month. After that, their plans are super affordable. We're talking honestly, an entire month is less than the cost of typically what would be the cost of one dress. And I am not kidding. That's right. Unlimited clothes for less than the cost of one outfit. I'm just so thrilled to bring this resource to you guys. I can't wait to hear what you guys think. So again, get free unlimited clothes for a month at MelanieAvalon'sCloset.com. That's MelanieAvalon'sCloset.com for all of the clothes, none of the waste. And definitely share your pictures and tag me on Instagram because I want to see all the fabulous things that you guys are wearing. That's MelanieAvalon'sCloset.com.
One more thing before we jump in. Did you know that common ingredients found in skincare and makeup products can actually disrupt your endocrine system? These endocrine disruptors are a silent threat that can have significant impact on your health, including something that is very important to me, fertility. Your skin is your body's largest organ, and what you put on it matters. Endocrine disruptors are chemicals that interfere with the natural hormonal communication in the body. It also matters during pregnancy. And that's one of the reasons I pay close attention to what I put on my skin while being pregnant. Studies have shown that exposure to endocrine disruptors can affect both male and female fertility. For women, these disruptors can lead to irregular menstrual cycles, ovulation issues, and even polycystic ovarian syndrome, or PCOS. In men, they can reduce sperm quality and quantity, making it even more challenging to conceive. But it's not just about fertility. When it comes to fat loss, one of the reasons that endocrine disruptors can get in the way of fat loss is because a lot of our toxins are actually stored in our fat. It's a way that our bodies protect us from those toxins. These toxic compounds can even work synergistically, amplifying their harmful effects and making it that much harder to shed unwanted body fat. All of these reasons are why I am obsessed with a company called Beauty Counter. The founder actually started the company when she learned about the potential dangers of toxic chemicals and their link to health issues, specifically miscarriages and infertility. While pregnant, I make sure to only use Beauty Counter products. It's one of the only makeup lines that is officially recommended from the Environmental Working Group. What really sets Beauty Counter apart is their unwavering commitment to protecting us, the consumers, from the hidden dangers that lurk in conventional beauty products. Beauty Counter goes above and beyond, rigorously screening every single ingredient that goes into their products, ensuring that they are safe, clean, and free from harmful toxins. They're not just a beauty brand, they're a movement for change, advocating for stronger regulations in the beauty industry. With Beauty Counter, I know that I can trust that the skincare and makeup that I use are not only effective, but also safe for me and my family. They have skincare lines for every skin type, as well as so many other incredible products. I absolutely love their overnight resurfacing peel. It's my favorite way to get anti-aging benefits in a skincare product. The makeup is absolutely amazing. I have tried alternative beauty products in the past and none of them truly performed. But with Beauty Counter, the foundation is so amazing. It makes me feel like my skin can breathe and it looks so dewy and beautiful. You can shop with me at beautycounter.com/VanessaSpina. New customers can use the code CLEANFORALL20 for 20% off their first order. Beautycounter.com/VanessaSpina. All right, friends, now back to the show.
Hi, everyone, and welcome. This is episode number 292 of the Intermittent Fasting Podcast. I'm Cynthia Thurlow, and I'm here with Scott Emmons, co-founder and COO of MD Logic Health.
Cynthia, thank you for having me on the IF podcast. It's a pleasure to be here with you today.
Absolutely. And so today we're going to unpack creatine. I think this is certainly a supplement that I used to have, you know, probably prejudicial thought processes on, but the more I've understood the science and the more that I've understood about the benefits of creatine, both for men and women, the more I was interested in sharing the research and connecting with you. And I'd really love to start the conversation there. What exactly is creatine?
So creatine is an organic acid. It is endogenously produced in the body. You can also take it as a supplement. It's a combination of three amino acids, which are arginine, glycine, and methionine. And it's produced in the kidneys and in the liver.
Yeah, it's interesting. When I was doing my, you know, research before we even talked about bringing creatine to market, was that the liver and the kidneys produce 2 grams a day on their own, and it's all stored in our skeletal muscle. And so, you know, for me, I think from my perspective as a clinician, what I understood about creatine was that it was something just utilized by bodybuilders. And what I've come to find out is that there's so many variations of creatine. There's so many options available. The two consistent things that I saw in the literature that really stood out for me was the improvement on muscle health and muscle strength, and then also the cognitive benefits. And so, you know, from my perspective, this is something that's applicable to everyone. It's not just, you know, gender specific. It really is applicable to everyone.
Well, it's been like a second coming for me, Cynthia, because I started out as a biology major and a bodybuilder in college. So I'm very familiar with creatine. And I had used it back in the days when, you know, you took 20 grams and it was sort of, that was it. It was a bodybuilding supplement. 20 grams, by the way, is a lot, way too much. In fact, can really cause some GI upset, kidney damage, and so forth over the long term. But at lower doses, it's, you know, it's really an effective product. What I was so blown away by was after, you know, 30 years out of sort of the bodybuilding scene, dating myself a little, I could not believe how many studies are continuing to go on with this product and how much more benefits they're seeing across a wide array of issues, including brain health. That was the one I think that shocked me the most was the number of different studies that are ongoing or that are in early trials for various different brain health issues.
Yeah. And so because you started your experiences with creatine at a different stage of life, what have been some of the common misconceptions that you have seen or heard over the last 30 years, particular to creatine use?
I think, first of all, that it causes weight gain or weight gain in women, which is highly unlikely, if not zero probability, that it can be very dangerous. There's a lot of controversy about the danger of creatine. It's, in fact, one of the most studied supplements that I've ever seen. It's been studied and researched well over 30 years at this point. So its safety is pretty much unparalleled. And then the other sort of misconception, because A, it's only for bodybuilders or for only for men, or that it's only for athletes. When in fact, the research shows that there are many people that can benefit, particularly like vegans and women that benefit from making sure to maintain muscle mass, especially, you know, postmenopausal. So there's just a tremendous amount of research coming out that this is an everyone sort of nutrient, that your body requires creatine. In fact, if you have a complete void of creatine, it can cause some pretty significant problems.
Absolutely. And it's interesting because I admittedly was a little prejudicial in my thought process. And I think it was because my knowledge of creatine was really related to the bodybuilding set. And at one time, I was an ER nurse in inner city Baltimore, and I saw quite a bit of people that are using anabolic steroids, and they were using other types of supplementation. And I'm sure that creatine probably got lumped in with some of the other side effects that were completely unrelated to the creatine utilization and more a byproduct of illegal exogenous use of anabolic steroids.
Yeah, I can attest to that. Having been in that world, you know, you would get approached with someone trying to sell you something that was illegal on a regular basis. And as a person of health, it just wasn't, you know, in my wheelhouse. So I had to understand how these products worked. And I was a big supplement user in my early age because in order to compete with people that were using anabolic steroids, made, you know, they could go eat a pizza and still look ripped. Whereas for me, you know, I was doing things like creatine and things like boron and zinc combinations and other minerals, amino acids, back to branched chain amino acids and full, you know, the essential amino acids way before they became sort of popular or in vogue. There was definitely a large combination of people joining creatine and other, including diuretics, which can cause other serious problems.
Yeah, absolutely. And for full disclosure, I had been skeptical about creatine until my very well-researched trainer, who's also an attorney. She's got a really interesting background. She was actually sharing the research last fall and kept saying, I really think you should consider supplementation with creatine. And the one thing that I have found personally, and we'll talk about this today, you know, the benefits of creatine, how it works in the body, was that I went from, as a menopausal female, when women really do struggle with, you know, not only building, but maintaining muscle mass, unless they're taking exogenous testosterone, I was able to consistently lift heavier weight week to week. And I was able to see more of those gains. And we track all of our metrics because she and I are a little bit OCD about this. And so for me, I kept saying, if I am capable of achieving and maintaining muscle mass at the stage of life I'm in, then this is something that could be really beneficial for other women and certainly other men that are considering, you know, wanting to build, maintain muscle mass, because we think of muscle as an organ of longevity. And certainly I follow really closely with Dr. Gabrielle Lyon's work. And she was very excited when I told her that I was seriously considering bringing creatine on as my first product in conjunction with MD Logic. So let's talk a little bit about what creatine does. And so from a technical perspective, creatine rephosphorylates utilized ATP. So ATP is this energy molecule in the body. And so adenosine triphosphate becomes adenosine diphosphate when you move muscles. So your body's using this energy when you're moving your muscles. And creatine actually attaches another phosphorus group to ADP. So it's a way to keep recycling, you know, creating this stored energy And for anyone that's listening, that's saying, I don't even know what you're talking about. We're talking about what goes on inside the mitochondria. And I know this is a very savvy, you know, science-oriented listener base. And so really think about, like, this is going on in the mitochondria. So the powerhouses of our cells.
And I think what's important for people to understand too, is that I think sometimes we associate ATP with just our muscle cell. But in fact, it's all of our cells, right? It's your brain cells, it's your heart cells, it's all of the cells in your body, your immune cells. Every cell in your body requires ATP for energy. If you run out of energy, then you're going to run out of life. What creatine is able to do is, to your point, make that ADP turn back into ATP, which is sort of the foundational molecule for our energy, much faster. So if you've got creatine stored in your body, creatine serum in your blood, you're going to replace that quicker. And your brain and your heart probably use up more ATP and more energy than any two organs in your body. So it makes sense when you think about how it could work for your brain because of the way that it works on ATP.
Absolutely. And it's involved in energy mobilization and metabolism in the brain. I also think about the net impact on things like glycine and GABA, which impacts sleep. So as women, especially in their perimenopausal years, 10 to 15 years preceding menopause, and their ovaries are producing less progesterone, this is a time when upregulation of GABA is really important for high quality sleep. And so when you really dive into the research, one of the things I found interesting, and there's a great article that we'll link up, it's called Creatine Supplementation in Women's Health, a Lifespan Perspective. And the researchers here really talk about how creatine has a place throughout a woman's lifetime, not just perimenopause and menopause, but your menstrual cycle. We're not going to touch on pregnancy or lactation because I don't want to touch that with a 10-foot pole, but there is research that kind of touches on how this can be beneficial. And, you know, it's not just, as you said, it's not just the muscles, but it's really a systemic supplement that has a lot of benefits. And the one thing that I really like about this article in particular is that it admits, despite extensive research on creatine, evidence for use among females is understudied. So they acknowledge, like many things, there's not enough research being done on women in peak fertile years and perimenopause and menopause, but they do see the importance during, it actually says supplementation during menses, pregnancy, postpartum, during and postmenopause. Again, we're not talking about pregnant or lactating women, but we'll talk about women that are still in their peak fertile years, perimenopause and menopause, that there really are quite a bit of benefits from supplementation.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not surprising that it wasn't studied in women. That happens, you know, quite often. I did find it interesting that there are some variations in women either have or store creatine. So I'd like to talk about that when we get a chance. But I didn't read the research that you read on sleep and GABA upregulation. Tell me a little bit more about that.
It's interesting that it can have a positive net impact on. So there's an excitatory neurotransmitter, and that's glutamic acid. And then there's a, you know, kind of inhibitory neurotransmitter, and that's GABA. And so the thought process is that the creatine absorption will upregulate the inhibitory neurotransmitters. It also has some impact on neuronal ATP resynthesis, which impacts areas in the brain that'll impact memory, cognition, and attention. So it, again, it's down-regulating excitatory areas of the brain and helping to facilitate concentration as well as relaxation. So there was research in one of the articles that I had shared with you talking a little bit about the sleep piece. It wasn't a huge area of focus, but I think in particular for individuals that are north of 35 or 40, where sleep becomes much more of a, I always say jokingly, it becomes an art form. All of a sudden you have to think a whole lot more about it. You have to think about what you're doing, preceding bed, what you eat, what you drink, whether that's alcoholic or not, and all the things you need to do in order to help facilitate sleep. One of the things that it talks about in particular was this brain metabolism. And then also secondarily to that, it's involved in the synthesis of key neurotransmitters. So it's actually found in the cerebral spinal fluid, which is important. And there are actual dopamine and serotonin and creatine metabolites that they're finding in the cerebral spinal fluid, which means that it must have some good absorption. So when we talk about the blood-brain barrier, there are some things that are able to cross the blood-brain barrier, and there's some things that are not able to cross the blood-brain barrier. And so that's pretty significant. If we're getting, you know, cerebral spinal fluid levels, then you've got some good absorption in the brain, which a lot of supplements and drugs do not have good absorption in the brain. And that can, you know, complicate how well or how effective they can be.
I saw another article on just specifically creatine and brain health and talked about being able to cross the blood-brain barrier. The fact that it was able to do that really gave the brain some neuroprotective properties as well. And I think that that also could be because the brain has more energy. The big one that was interesting, and I think this goes back to the ability to focus and concentrate, and not get excited, right? So it's usually if you have a stimulant or something that gives you energy, going to make you jittery, right? But this has the opposite effect where it calms you, but also gives your brain the ATP that it needs to perform. And so the hypothesis is that your brain fatigue comes from the fact that it's eating up the ATP faster than it can create it. So that creatine crossing the blood-brain barrier really allows your cognition to kind of be at a constant, steady level, which is, I think, where the real benefit for so many of us come from. And if you're getting good sleep on top of that, well, then your cognition is going to just continue to enhance. One thing I just want to go back to, Cynthia, you said when you first started taking it, you felt yourself getting stronger. And I wanted to point that out because as a former bodybuilder and personal trainer, one of the things that happens, you can start to lift heavier weight. It then becomes a positive cycle upward. Because as you lift heavier weight, you get stronger. As you get stronger, you get bigger and stronger muscles. Of course, you hit a point where you've hit sort of a plateau. But the fact that gives you that jump start to be able to lift heavier weights allows for both your skeletal system to get stronger, your joints to get stronger, as well as your muscles to get stronger and protect yourself from sarcopenia, which I know we're going to talk about later, which really is a serious disease at the end of the day. I mean, it's sort of the beginning of the end stage of life and certainly a predictor for longevity.
I think that a good place to start is perhaps talking a little bit about gender differences. There's no question that men and women can both benefit. But it's interesting, like from a perspective that women actually make less creatine than men as a standard. And so, I mean, that could be related to so many different factors, but understanding that just at a cellular level, our bodies make less of this substance. So I would argue that it makes it even more important to consider supplementation to help maintain muscle mass, brain cognition. And when we're really looking at such a small percentage of the population, back to brain health, only 7 to 8% of Americans right now are metabolically flexible. And, you know, this is research looking post-pandemic. Pre-pandemic, it was, 12%. Now even less people. And so really thinking about ways to augment metabolic flexibility. One of those is really leaning into lifting weights, intermittent fasting, or eating less often. It could be 12-hour feeding window. Just really understand there are a lot of things within our control that we can do to utilize supporting health and wellness. And I always say, my greatest hope is that people look at, they don't fear aging, but they understand that you don't want to just survive. You want to thrive at each stage of life. If you're peak fertile years, perimenopause, menopause, really important to understand you want to have a high quality of life.
Yeah, absolutely. There's definitely differences between men and women. And women do make significantly less creatine. From the research I could see, estrogen did play a role in that. And it did sort of go along with the cycle. So there definitely seems to be something there, which to your point makes it all the more important for certain populations. I think women being one of them, which is ironic because it's been utilized in male bodybuilding world for so long. But in reality, women will benefit tremendously from creatine.
Yeah, there's a really good graphic that's in this one study that I'm looking at, and it's talking about the menstrual cycle may influence creatine homeostasis due to the cyclical nature of sex hormone regulation. You mentioned in particular that it's sensitive to estrogen, which also explains why women in perimenopause and menopause that are having these faltering amounts of estrogen may have even greater needs. But you can actually plot on this graph. They have on the x-axis is creatine kinase activity and estrogen and progesterone concentrations. And then on the y-axis, they're looking at different phases, the follicular, ovulation, luteal phases, which everyone on this podcast is very familiarized with. And you can literally look at how they plot out glycogen storage, carbohydrate oxidation, dependent on how much sex hormones are and where they are peaking and where they are ebbing and flowing throughout the menstrual cycle. And so it's interesting that we know that estrogen influences creatine and also creatine kinase, and that estrogen in and of itself is a master regulator of bioenergetics. Yeah. So what does that mean? As we are losing estrogen, either in our menstrual cycle or in perimenopause or menopause, it is a direct reflection of the loss of insulin sensitivity. So obviously in middle age, it's going to eventually be a permanent thing unless you're taking hormone replacement therapy. For menstruating women, peak fertile years, they have cyclical alterations in their estrogen month to month. And that is, you know, the ebbs and flows. They have days where it's higher and lower throughout their menstrual cycle. Whereas with middle-aged women, it's they're on a downward trend. Ultimately, they'll be on a downward trend.
Yeah, that's very interesting. So when you said that estrogen is the master hormone for, what was the verbiage that
they
you
used? The term bioenergetics.
Bioenergetics.
Which makes sense.
So essentially, once you have no estrogen, your bioenergetics is essentially completely downregulated.
You're no longer in an anabolic growth phase of any kind. You're really in this catabolic phase unless you are actively, progressively working against it. And so from my perspective, is we've kind of touched on, you know, sarcopenia, which is this muscle loss with aging. And it's not a question of if, but when. You know, people, if you think you do nothing, and I can now recognize middle-aged women or even older women that are just kind of just skinny. And it's because they've lost their muscle mass. They really start replacing adipose tissue, which is highly inflammatory, with our muscle tissue. And I always use the analogy because I'm very visual. When we're looking at non-sarcopenic or healthy muscle tissue, it looks like filet versus a ribeye. You know, people love eating ribeye, but we don't want to become a ribeye. And I use that to understand, like, the marbling in the meat is right. What starts happening to your muscle because you're losing muscle mass. In fact, I was at an event this summer, actually with Gabrielle Line and a few other people, and there was a special type of scale that you stepped on, and it could tell you pretty accurately how much muscle mass you had on. And she and I had a pretty good laugh when we were looking at my results. But the point of what I'm trying to make to everyone is that you want to maintain muscle mass like your life depends on it. And I don't think I appreciated that enough in my 20s and 30s. And certainly, you know, you start seeing the slippery slopes. 40 is about when we start losing a significant amount of muscle mass, and then it just accelerates. So you wanted to be doing all the things you can to maintain as much as possible so that you're less at risk for metabolic diseases, insulin resistance, et cetera.
And Cynthia, I've heard you talk about this on the podcast, the IF podcast before, and it's in Everyday Wellness as well, that, you know, sarcopenia is sort of it creeps up on you, but also that when you're in your 20s and 30s, you know, what should you be doing? And in my personal opinion and experience, people that have built up their muscle in their 20s and 30s, when they have all those natural anabolic hormones circulating through their blood, tend to do much better when they hit their 40s and 50s if they're kind of continuing, even if they're just doing a maintenance workout or sort of just push-ups and pull-ups, the basics. You'll see that the people that kind of had that foundation tend to stay better. So if you're in your 40s, I mean, it's never too late to start, right? But if you're in your 40s and you haven't been working out, you probably should hit the gym and get a trainer and learn how to work out, because it's a point of no return. And that's the point where you've really got to face the fact that, hey, if I don't have muscle in my 60s and 70s, my 80s are going to be rough. And that's the way you don't just have longevity, but you have health span. You know, if you want to be healthy in your 80s, you got to be able to get yourself up out of a chair, you know, without using your arm, just to be able to stand up. And that sounds easy, but when you're 80, it's not so easy. So I completely agree that you've got to make sure that you have a foundation. If you're 20 or 30 now, you're listening to this podcast, start making your muscles strong now. You won't regret it. You'll never regret having really strong lower legs and really strong arms and shoulders and a strong back and a strong core. You're never going to regret that. And creatine is one of those things that will help you get to that place in a very natural way. It's a natural substance that you get from meat, but your body is usually excreting more than it's taking in. And extra creatine has been demonstrated time and time again to help you get there. The other statement you said that I thought was profound is that you're in a constant state of catabolic state, constant catabolic state, you know, after menopause. Well, that basically means you're eating your own muscle tissue, right? And that is a dangerous place to be. And so I would really recommend that those folks also, you know, hit the gym, to take both protein, whether that's in the form of essential amino acids or whether that's in the form of a protein powder combined with the creatine, or get the protein from your diet. But somehow you've got to be getting about a gram per pound, in my opinion, protein a day. You might be less for women, maybe 0.8 grams per pound. You definitely need to have that protein. And creatine is one of those things that make that protein store all that better for you. All that said, It's all going to work much better for you if you're working out with weight.
Hi, friends. I'm about to tell you how to get one of my favorite things to support your fast for completely free. Yes, completely free. So here's the thing. When people feel tired, crampy, or weak during fasting, they usually blame that on a lack of food. And true, that's certainly part of it. All of those symptoms can be due to low blood sugar, which is hypoglycemia. However, did you know there's another major cause of those symptoms? That would be inadequate electrolytes. Low electrolytes can affect anyone who fasts because actually food is our main source of electrolytes. And during a fast, you're not consuming anything. You also excrete more sodium in a fasted state. So you have fewer electrolytes coming in during a fast and more going out. That makes it super easy for deficiencies to develop, manifesting in things like cramps, headaches, brain fog, lack of energy, and other uncomfortable symptoms. But thankfully, you can prevent this with electrolytes. So what's the problem? Most of the electrolyte products on the market are either loaded with sugar or woefully lacking in actual electrolytes. That's why I and so many of you guys are obsessed with Element. Element was created by former research biochemist Rob Wolf with Keto Gains founder Luis Villasenor. Element has enough sodium, potassium, and magnesium to move the needle and keep you feeling and performing your best. Plus, friends, so many electrolyte supplements out there are full of so much stuff that you don't want to be putting in your body. Element has zero sugar, zero artificial colors, zero dodgy ingredients that might be holding you back. So yes, you can drink the raw, unflavored Element during your fast to help support it without breaking it, while of course supporting your hydration in general. It's especially important if you train fasted, since you lose extra electrolytes through sweat. And guess what? Research actually suggests that sodium supplementation mitigates weight rebound after a fast. Element also comes in so many incredible flavors for your eating window. They've got flavors like citrus salt, which, by the way, makes an awesome low-carb margarita, raspberry salt, mango chili, chocolate salt, my favorite watermelon, and so much more. And I'm so excited because Element has a fantastic offer for you guys. You can get free electrolytes. Just go to drinklmnt.com/ifpodcast to get a free sample pack with any purchase. Yep, you can try all the Element flavors for completely free. Just go to drinklmnt.com/ifpodcast to claim this free deal. And we'll put all this information in the show notes.
No, I agree with you. And you really bring up some excellent points. And I always use myself as an example because it makes it relatable. We have muscle memory. So if we've been working our muscles for years, or even if we go through a period of time where we take a break, when we go back to training, we'll be able to get back to where we were a little bit faster than someone that's new. But in 2019, I spent 13 days in the hospital. And I lost 15 pounds, all of which was mostly muscle. And there were many, many months where I was convinced I was using bands. I mean, they had me doing body weight exercise and then bands. And then I could finally graduate to using weights. And the one thing my trainer said, because at that point I was coming back from a long hospitalization, I did hire a trainer because I didn't want to hurt myself. And I remember him saying, you know, you're at an advantage because your muscles, although you lost a lot of your muscle mass, your muscles, once they start growing again, they'll know what they need to be doing. And so I encourage everyone to, if you're not currently lifting or doing weight training, even if you start with body weight exercises and then graduate to bands and graduate to dumbbells and then graduate to, you know, get to a point where maybe you're using machines, really take the time to be thoughtful about understanding the physiology of your body. I mean, there's so many, I don't believe in having regrets, but I do wish someone had talked to me in my 20s and 30s about the fact that's when you're at your peak bone and muscle mass. And then you just start to have this slow, slow decline that may not even be perceptible for a long period of time. And men go through this too. Let me be very clear. Andropause is a real thing. So men, much like women, they may not have as exaggerated demonstration. You know, women go through reverse puberty. That's essentially what's happening in perimenopause. Men can go through andropause and they may have trouble maintaining muscle. They may have trouble building muscle. And so most of the reason why men in the States start losing testosterone is from exogenous sources of estrogen mimicking chemicals, also from insulin resistance. So again, we go back to the same things about maintaining metabolic flexibility, how important that is. And I'm sure for those of you that are familiar with both Melanie and my single podcast, we talk a lot about toxins we get exposed to our environment, our personal care products, our food. It is important. You do want to care about those things, but maintaining muscle mass is of particular significance. And if you're not currently lifting, you can change that. If you start off really simply, it can make such a big difference. And the one thing that I found, you know, working in hospitals for over 20 years, there's nothing more sad than having a 55-year-old patient that can't get off a bedside commode because their muscles in their quadriceps, which are their big muscles in their legs, have atrophied from lack of use. If you don't use it, you will lose it. And that's why I think it's so important to understand that we're not saying this, you know, just related to aesthetics. We're just saying from a functional perspective, you want to be able to get out of bed. You want to be able to get off a toilet. You don't want to fall. You know, fall risk is significant. You don't have to be 60, 70, or 80 years old to be at a fall risk. We had plenty of younger patients that were just so sedentary that they had really lost their muscle mass. They didn't even realize it until they got to the hospital and they were so weak. They just couldn't do normal, we call them ADLs, activities of daily living. And this is quite significant.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can relate to that on two personal levels. First, you know, at 52, I feel like I might be hitting andropause. Is that a real term?
It is a real pause. It is a real term, but it's not utilized as openly probably as menopause.
So it's getting more difficult for me to maintain muscle mass. But to your earlier point, two things. One, on a humorous note, you know, you work out for 15 years. You know, you put on 30 pounds of muscle. You spend 13 days in the hospital, and bam, you know, you lose 15 pounds of muscle like that. It's not quite fair on the work in, you know, how fast you lose that. But that goes to show you that if you're not maintaining it through diet and exercise and supplementation, you're going to lose it just naturally. So I do feel that. In fact, since we started working this project together, I've been up my dose of creatine. I used to take it like every other day or when I worked out. Now I'm taking it every day. And I've actually seen a difference in about just the last couple of weeks. So that's been nice. But
really
my dad, who was 74, this was 4 years ago, we went to Lake George and we were at my uncle's house and he couldn't get out of the boat. I had to literally pick my dad up out of the boat. And I took my dad in the house and we chatted for a while. Later that night, I just sat him down and I said, "Hey, you know, we're going to have to get you working out again, because if you can't get out of a boat by yourself and you're living on your own, I'm nervous where you're heading." Let me say, and I didn't call it sort of opinion, but I said, muscle wasting at your age is the first sign of, you know, you kind of going downhill. And I know what your life goals are. And at 74, you shouldn't be not able to get out of a boat, right? And now he's on the Stairmaster doing an hour and a half a day. And I'm thinking, he's doing better than I am. So I'm really proud of him. But I saw that firsthand, you know, at 74, he's in better shape at 78 than he was at 74.
It just goes to show you that you don't have to be 20 and still see benefits from weight training and physical activity. We are designed as human beings to be active. And I, unfortunately, probably not our listeners, but, you know, looking at the general population here in the United States, people are far less active than they should be. And it just becomes, it's almost like a domino effect. I had plenty of cardiology patients that they would say, you know, it's too hard to kind of get back in the game. And one thing that I will share with the listeners is that low testosterone, and so that can happen in perimenopause and menopause. It can happen to men as well. It's important to know that a sign of low testosterone is a lack of motivation, a lack of desire. So last year I was on a full complement of hormone replacement therapy, and we found that I was on like way too much. And so we stopped it and I had a 6-week washout. And you can imagine you go from feeling pretty good to then feeling pretty bad. And I remember talking to Gabrielle Line, and I said, "I can tell my testosterone is low because I have zero motivation to go to the gym," which is not me. I have zero motivation to do these things. So I had to really just force myself to do it. But I want to just identify and be fully transparent and say that that can be a sign your testosterone levels are low. If you're really feeling incredibly unmotivated, this also ties into one other benefit of creatine use that I think is really interesting. And then we're looking at a study that it talked about as an example, you know, depression is not vis-a-vis, it's related to many factors, you know, gut health, situational circumstances, et cetera. But we know that depression in women is 2 times higher. We know it's directly linked to hormone milestones like puberty. I mean, I have two teenagers. Trust me when I tell you, they are grumpy and moody. And it's also linked to menopause. And what's interesting is that if you have a low creatine intake, either from diet or supplementation, you're at 31% greater incidence of depression than those that are taking exogenous creatine supplementation and or getting it from animal-based protein. And I thought that was really interesting, especially coming off the tail end of the past 2.5 years. We won't mention what's been going on. We're all quite aware of it. But I think for a lot of people, just also understanding that there's, you know, there's also this mental health benefit from creatine use, that keeping adequate levels of creatine endogenously in the body is intricately interwoven with depression and anxiety as well.
That really struck me, was not only is it good for your cognition, your focus, but your mood as well. And it seems to have, from this early data that we're looking at, some significant enhancement on, you know, your overall mood, motivation, and really depression, which is kind of interesting. I'm not sure if there was a mechanism of action identified in that, but it's just remarkable how important creatine seems to be for your overall mental health.
There was also some research I read about BDNF, so brain-derived neurotrophic factor, which we know is a stimulatory protein. It diffuses across the blood-brain barrier, but we know that it increases new brain cell production. So it's increasing neuroplasticity while improving the performance of existing brain cells. And so higher BDNF is a lower risk of depression. So I wonder if it's tied into that. And it's interesting how just the process of aging and stress can decrease BDNF, especially those that are not actively learning new skills or hobbies. So we're going to touch on neuroplasticity here, but this is why we're going to be lifelong learners. We should always be learning. I just spent the weekend with one of my college roommates and we had an amazing time, and she's a teacher, and we were talking about this, and she was saying, even in like her own teaching population, that she said those that are still continuing to take classes and learn are thriving. And those that are kind of at the standstill, that, you know, college is 30 years ago and they haven't really taken, you know, they don't do continuing education. They're not investing in conferences. They're not listening to podcasts. They're not reading books, and how that's impacting their brain health. And so this just validates that, you know, aging and stress can impact BDNF. We also know that creatine in and of itself, vis-a-vis, can improve BDNF levels as well in the body. So it's, you know, a neuroplasticity, learning new things, exogenous supplementation can also be beneficial for brain health.
Yeah, I'm obsessed with BDNF. Everything that I think can raise brain-derived neurotrophic factor, I take. I figure, how can that possibly hurt? And exercise is one of those things, right? So again, we're back to a positive circle up. If creatine helps you get more motivated, helps you get better exercise, you get more exercise. We know exercise is good for BDNF as well. So it's sort of a nice cycle upward instead of the cycle down. Lack of exercise is going to lower your BDNF. Lower creatine is going to lower your BDNF. So again, this is a nice way to think of the instead of these cycles down, how can you cycle up? And the way that you do that, you take creatine, which helps you exercise, which helps BDNF, which helps you exercise, which helps BDNF. Just a quick aside, there was a recent study that came out. As an avid tennis player, I have to mention this. They showed that tennis both extended your lifespan, but the longest of all sports, but also had the best impact on your overall brain health. Because it's both a sport of strategy, at the same time, you're kind of running around the court. But it also applied to pickleball, for those of you who are getting into pickleball, which is the new rage. And it even worked in ping pong, showed ping pong that ping pong had a really positive effect on the brain. So if you're looking for some exercises to help with your brain, paddle sports, badminton, tennis, pickleball seem to be the best.
Yeah, it's really interesting how important I think it is for people to be, whether it's the hand-eye coordination or just the concentration, but doing things that make you a little uncomfortable. When I say uncomfortable, I'm not talking physically uncomfortable per se, but just intellectually, like pushing yourself, learning something new, getting outside your comfort zone. I have a friend that's learning, I don't know why, she wants to learn a language. Someone in one of my group programs who's saying she loves to do puzzles for that exact reason, that she wants to push herself outside her comfort level. And I was actually mentioning to my husband, he just started doing Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu right before the onset of the pandemic. He was a college athlete and you know, now that we're in a new part of the state, you know, he isn't able to play seniors level lacrosse. And so for him, he said it's like playing chess, but he gets to roll on, around on a mat with, you know, sometimes guys that are like 20 years younger than him, but he can hold his own. And of course, you know, as a former college athlete, he loves that. He gets that validation that he's still like strong and virile. But I think for each one of us, we have to find ways to constantly be challenging ourselves. And I think on a lot of levels, we're just so fortunate to be in a time where information is accessible for at any point in time. I have a large stack of books. I'm always reading. I'm always prepping for podcasts, but I have heard a lot about pickleball. I don't know how it differentiates from tennis. And I don't want to take like a huge rabbit hole jump, but I'm just curious, how different is it than tennis? I know it's with a racket and a ball.
So it's kind of, if you were to combine ping pong and tennis and put yourself on the ping pong table, that would be the best way to describe it.
Interesting.
So it's a lot less running and a lot more about sort of teamwork and strategy. You can usually play in doubles. And it's just so much fun because, you know, it's fast paced and you get sort of these crazy wild points. And it's just a lot of fun, but it's a lot of good exercise too, without having to, you know, be able to run all across the court. If you want to learn pickleball, it's the sport to get into. It's the fastest growing sport in America.
I'll definitely have to check it out because my husband and I will be empty nesters in 4 years. And so for us, we're looking for all sorts of ways to do things together, new things together. Let's talk about some of the age-related changes that happen in our bodies and how creatine can, you know, potentially be a countermeasure to changes in muscle and bone strength, can be implicated in reducing inflammation and oxidative stress. And I did see a couple articles talking about improvement in bone reabsorption. But when I went down that rabbit hole, I didn't feel like the strength of the research was strong enough to be able to say this is an indication per se. Maybe in the future, we'll hear more about it. But I do think in particular for people in menopause, andropause, where we are de facto in a state of chronic low-level inflammation, sometimes high-level inflammation if we're insulin resistant and metabolically unhealthy, but how creatine can be beneficial for these specific timeframes.
Well, let's quickly address the bone issue. So I went down the research rabbit hole on bone and couldn't find anything specific for creatine, you know, that was definitively positive. I think the reason for the mixed results, and this is just my personal opinion, but again, I think it goes back to if you're able to lift heavier weights or use heavier bands, really what we know for sure is that if you're putting weight on your skeletal system that it can tolerate, it's going to stimulate, you know, proper bone growth given you have the right nutrition. But I think what creatine can do is by making your muscles stronger, allowing you to lift heavier and heavier weights under the guidance of professional trainer. You don't want to go out there and hurt yourself. That, I think, in and of itself could be the way that creatine could help with the bone. It may not be a direct result, maybe an indirect result of creatine. That's just a theory because I couldn't find anything definitive in the research.
Yeah, I was the same. I went down that rabbit hole and I wanted it to be true, but I didn't feel like the research was strong enough to say this is an indication per se. But I would agree with you that someone that's going to work diligently about building, maintaining muscle is very likely getting improvement in their bone health. And one thing I just want to interject is that our bone building accelerates in puberty and then it sort of plateaus. And then interestingly enough, in andropause and menopause, but I can speak more specifically to women because I'm more familiarized with the research, what starts to happen is our bone diminishing activity starts, osteoclastic activity upregulates, which means we're actively breaking down bone as opposed to building bone. And that's why women in many ways are at greater risk for osteopenia, osteoporosis at the time in their lives. Obviously, osteopenia is kind of a, lack of a better way to put it, it's kind of a diagnosis that was created by the pharmaceutical company. It's really not a diagnosis per se, because they're comparing the bone tensile strength of a 50-year-old to a 20-year-old, and you can't compare that great of a difference in age. So osteopenia, I don't get terribly concerned about, but obviously osteoporosis is significant and really does need to be addressed proactively. And interestingly enough, one thing that kind of accelerates a lot of these processes in the body in women is that as we have lower and lower estrogen levels, so tail end of perimenopause, because in menopause, we can have very high estrogen levels prior to going into menopause. is that this is what really drives inflammation. It drives the oxidative stress, it drives a degree of insulin resistance, and it also blunts muscle protein synthesis and also satellite cell response to anabolic stimuli, which is a fancy way of saying strength training. So it's not in your head. If you find that in perimenopause and menopause, it is a lot harder to build muscle, you are working against hormones. You know, the hormones that are saying, you know, there's not enough estrogen around, and estrogen is definitely one of these hormones that we have estrogen receptors throughout our body, but directly impacts this muscle protein synthesis. And so it is not in your head if you're struggling to maintain and build muscle. Estrogen and testosterone can definitely play a role in that.
The power of hormones is undeniable, right? You feel it when you go through menopause. You feel it when you go through andropause. You see it when people take artificial steroids. I mean, you look a gentleman or a woman on steroids, you can tell. At least I can tell. They're very powerful, both. And I think people also underestimate the power of hormones on your mental cognition as well. A lot of effects on your mentality, as you alluded to earlier, about how when your testosterone lowered, you just have no motivation. Well, that's sort of like, you think that's in your head, but it's not. It's a hormonal issue.
Exactly. And I think there's, you know, the Women's Health Initiative is a study that I definitely talk about on the podcast, but in 2002, the Women's Health Initiative really changed the narrative and the comfort level of clinicians prescribing hormone replacement therapy, made many, many patients scared. There's no other way to put it, scared to take hormone replacement therapy. And I did a really great podcast with Dr. Avram Blumming and Dr. Carol Tavris talking about this. He's a clinician, he's a physician, he's an oncologist, she's a researcher, and they really debunk the Women's Health Initiative. Unfortunately, it was done on an older population of women, many of whom had, you know, they already had insulin resistance. They were former smokers or current smokers. They had high blood pressure, a lot of health issues, and they put them on synthetics and then drew conclusions from that. And so I always like to just interject, there's no judgment, there's no shame. You know, I see a lot of women who are fearful to take hormones, and so they're white knuckling it into perimenopause and menopause. And each one of us has to make a decision, and this applies to men as well. Each one of us has to make a decision that makes the most sense to us. But understanding that hormone replacement therapy can be very beneficial, in particular for muscle and bone and brain health, yeah, and cardiovascular health, et cetera.
I've heard that podcast and I paid very close attention because I was in the pharmaceutical industry in 2002 when that study came out, and I was partnered with Eli Lilly, who made, I think they either funded the study or they were making a product for hormone replacement therapy for osteoporosis, what it was. And doctors stopped using it. My Lilly folks were in a frenzy. And I read that study then and I thought, this seems awfully skewed. And it's 20 years later, and just the other day, I kid you not, I heard people talking about that study in a negative light, which is a lot of what happened to creatine. When you said, what are some of the common misconceptions? People thought, well, it's bad for your kidneys, it's bad for your heart. It had all this negative press going into it. But that stuff is 20, 30 years old. It's one of the most studied supplements there is. So it's interesting that you use that for the study, because I think this is tantamount to that. Like, this is one of the best things you could do. That study sort of ruined HRT for a lot of people, which is a shame.
Absolutely, because there's a whole generation of women, I think about my mom's generation, that have really suffered needlessly because they were told that it was going to give them cancer. And we've now figured out that that's not actually the case. But let's swing back to sleep and sleep deprivation. And the reason why I think this is particularly important, we get a lot of questions on the podcast about sleep. And we know that high stress, chronic stress will actually deplete not just creatine stores, but actually ATP. So again, less energy circulating. And we know that supplementation with creatine, based on the research that we've both been looking at, can impact tasks that rely on the prefrontal cortex, which is our kind of executive functioning brain, the one that helps with cognition and attention and memory. Very important. Also very important because we know women are more sensitive to sleep deprivation, and particularly women that are most at risk are the women that are pregnant, breastfeeding, postpartum, and menopause, based on this research I was looking at. And I thought that was really interesting because for any woman that's listening that went through pregnancy and then had the postpartum period where you weren't sleeping for weeks or months on end, that's pretty harrowing. But also, kind of in this same research article, they were talking about menopause as the same degree of sensitization to sleep deprivation. And I think a lot of women that are listening or women know of other women who have spent years of having terrible sleep deprivation in middle age, both in perimenopause and menopause, and it's totally normalized. And I think that's really, really unfortunate.
It is. Well, and there was actually a study, I don't know if it was one of the ones you had sent me or one that I had read separately, that talked specifically about creatine's ability to support brain fatigue and sleep deprivation. That to me is not, I wouldn't call that a band-aid. What I would call that is it's going to allow you to get the energy you need to function throughout your day properly so that when you do go to bed, you're back in your rhythm. Because one of the things that we know about sleep is it's all about your rhythm, your circadian rhythm, your exposure to light, your lack of exposure to light in the evening, your cortisol spikes and peaks, amongst other things. But sleep is a lot about rhythm. If you don't have enough energy during the day and you're resting all day and you're sitting down all day and you're not active, well, then what's going to happen at night is you're going to kind of be in that wired, tired mode. You're exhausted, but yet you're tired, right? And so the information I looked at really sort of said, hey, look, if you're in this sleep-deprived state, not only can it help you get out of it, it can really help your brain kind of heal itself and be as pro and be as active as it was had it gotten that sleep. So to me, that's a way to kind of reset your circadian rhythm, at least your energy circadian rhythm. And then you've got to do other things, obviously, to support that.
I think it's really important. And it's something that I didn't realize until I was looking at the research that what has been different over the last couple months, in particular, because I've been taking creatine consistently, was my sleep quality has improved. And how do I track that? I track that on my Oura Ring. And then, you know, I proudly will, you know, screenshot it and share it in IG stories. And people say, oh my gosh, how did you get that much deep sleep? And I'm like, I think it's a couple things, but I keep, you know, trying one thing, pulling that out, trying something else. Because sleep in many ways becomes an art form. And I don't think I ever thought about sleep to the degree that I do now. But knowing that potentially the creatine I've been taking has been improving that sleep support, which again, I think most, if not all women and men for that matter, would truly desire to have better quality sleep.
Yeah, I've been a chronic insomniac pretty much my whole life. Recently, I've been sleeping pretty good. Got a whole system down. I do the light in the morning, try to keep it dark in the evening, creatine. Occasionally I'll do melatonin when I feel like I just need to reset my clock. But I've been doing really well, getting up at the same time every morning, going to bed at the same time every evening. And I have been taking creatine now for a couple of weeks, almost every day.
That's great. Well, probably important to talk about where we can get food sources of creatine and then talking about dosing, because I think that will be a huge question for many people. How much do I need? I eat, you know, I'm carnivore-ish. Do I really need more? The answer is yes. But what are some of the sources of animal-based protein that are most creatine dense, I guess is the way to put it?
I mean, it's going to be all of your, you know, essential meats, right? It's going to be steak and turkey, things of that nature. I don't think fish has a ton, but it has more than not. But basically, the really only place you're going to get creatine in your diet is from various meats. So it could be pork, it could be yak, it could be bison, but meat is really going to be the only substantive way to get it into your diet.
Okay, friends. People often ask me, what is the one supplement I cannot imagine my life without? And while there are a lot of supplements out there, a lot of ones that I love, a lot of ones that I advocate, there is one supplement that inspired me to create a whole supplement line. And that's because I take it every single day, and I really can't imagine my life without it. That would be Serapeptase. And I'm about to tell you how to get up to 15% off on a special bottle version that we have that also saves you money. So Serapeptase is a proteolytic enzyme created by the Japanese silkworm. Now we make it in a lab, so it is vegan. When you take this enzyme in the fasted state, it actually goes into your bloodstream and it breaks down problematic proteins in your body. These are things that your immune system is often reacting to and that create inflammation. That's why it can do incredible, amazing things like clear your sinuses. That's why I first started taking it. You can completely say goodbye to allergy meds with Serrapeptase. It reduces inflammation and pain. My friend just started taking it for her back pain and told me she was shocked at how effective it was, more so than the pain pills she normally was taking. It can help reduce cholesterol. It's even been shown in clinical studies to break down amyloid plaque in vitro and in vivo. Basically, it is a wonder supplement. And what's super cool about it is that it specifically breaks down those problematic non-living proteins. It doesn't harm healthy tissue. It actually helps protect that. That's because the function of the original enzyme in the silkworm is to break down the cocoon of the silkworm without actually harming the silkworm itself. And there aren't studies on this, but I really believe it can help catalyze your fast by enhancing the natural process of autophagy. Again, not studies on that, but from a mechanistic standpoint, it totally makes sense. Here's the thing. I was taking so many different brands of Serrapeptase, and they always seemed a little hard on my stomach and have problematic ingredients in them, especially special enteric coatings where they wouldn't disclose what that was made of, which meant it probably contained problematic plastics. I knew I needed to make a change. That's why I created my Avalon X Serrapeptase. It's what launched my Avalon X line. I will never stop taking it. It's one of my favorite things in my life, and the effects I experience are profound, and I hear that from all of you guys as well. We test it multiple times for purity and potency. It's free of all problematic fillers and common allergens. It comes in a glass bottle to help prevent leaching of plastics into ourselves and the environment. And we even use the minimum amount of stickiness in the label on the bottle to help reduce problematic compounds. So if you want to tackle your inflammation, clear your brain fog, oh, it's amazing for brain fog, stop your allergies, attack amyloid plaque, reduce pain, so many things, you need Serrapeptase. And you can get 10% off with the coupon code Melanie Avalon. But here's another thing. We actually have a special large bottle. It's the only supplement that we have right now in a large bottle. It's the 180 version, and it saves you money. If Serrapeptase is a part of your daily life, like it is mine, you definitely want our large bottle size, 180 capsules. It's the best way to save. And again, you can save even more with my Melanie Avalon 10% discount, or you can get 15% off that as well if you get a subscription, which, by the way, with a subscription, you could pause or cancel anytime after your first order. So it kind of makes sense to do a subscription because you save even more. If you want a supplement that you can actually feel the difference, I promise you, Serrapeptase is the way to go. And then you might end up like me and want to give it as gifts to everybody because it's that incredible and can address so many issues. You can get this at avalonx.us. That's AVALONX.US. Again, there is the 90 capsule size and the 180 capsule size. You save more with the 180. Use the coupon code Melanie Avalon for 10% off or get a subscription for 15% off. And we'll put all this information in the show notes.
Not eating meat, you're going to really be at risk for being low on creatine. If you're a vegan or vegetarian, especially if you don't even eat any fish, you're going to be at serious risk of a major creatine deficiency. Even if you're eating meat, there's not really enough per kilogram. If you look, it's like, I don't know, I can't remember the exact numbers. Maybe you've got it at your hands, but it's something like 0.8 milligrams per kilogram of meat. Well, a kilogram is 2.2 pounds. I don't eat 2.2 pounds of any meat, so there's not a ton of creatine going in. And the data I looked at says that, you know, average woman stores about 100 grams of creatine and excretes a net 2 or 3 grams a day. Men hold 120 and excrete about 2 or 3 grams a day as well. So you're kind of always in this negative deficiency unless you're eating enough meat to compensate for that. So when it comes to the dosing, for me, somewhere between 3 and 5 or 3 and 3 to 6, or even I'd even go to 9 if I felt like I needed some creatine because I hadn't had meat in some certain period of time. But I think it is dependent on what your diet is like. Are you a vegan? Are you a carnivore? An athlete, like, for example, my daughter is a Division I track athlete. So she runs the 400 meter, the 100 meter hurdles. You know, that is a lot of energy. She's got 3-hour practices every day. So I've got her on 9 milligrams of creatine a day, broken up into 3 doses, one with breakfast, one with lunch, one with dinner. My personal thought is I don't necessarily like to take 9 milligrams all at once. I'm going to take 9. I usually take 3, 3, and 3, or 5 and 5. I like to break it up. But I have her just in 3, 3, and 3. And that changed her trajectory because in high school, she wasn't the star of the team. We put her on creatine, some amino acids, and not that this was the only thing. She practiced and trained and did a lot of other things, but she ended up finishing 100 meter stakes in Pennsylvania, 6th in the entire state of Pennsylvania. So Was it creatine? No, not alone. But did that help? Yeah, I bet you that helped.
That's an incredible story. And I think it's important for people to understand, like, the average person listening could probably get away with 3 grams per day. Like Scott mentioned, his daughter is a Division I athlete, totally different, you know, needs. Based on research that we looked at, the vegetarians and vegans need probably 5 grams a day. And so just understanding that very athletic people, and by that I mean ultra level conditioned athletes. I'm not talking about the person who does CrossFit twice a week, although that's great. You're probably not the person that needs that high amount of creatine. And also it's interesting, depending on where a woman is in her menstrual cycle, she may need more or less, but we didn't want to get terribly nuanced about that because there's so many other factors that impact hormone regulation and insulin sensitivity throughout a menstrual cycle. But just understanding that 3 grams a day has been our recommended for the average person, that includes myself. But certainly if I were giving this to my very athletic, sports-oriented kiddos, it would probably be more because they're still growing. And obviously, if you are vegetarian or vegan, your creatine needs, because you're not eating animal-based food or products, is going to be higher. And what was interesting, and I just want to make sure I dovetail this into our discussion about vegetarianism and veganism, is that it was even discussed in some of the research that their needs for creatine just based on brain health are even higher because they're not getting those animal-based products. And we respect people's choices. I just wanted to make sure I mentioned that they have to take more creatine to ward off the brain health-related concerns.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, we all make our individual choices. We obviously respect those choices. But I think it's important for people to know when they make any choice, whether it's to eat meat, what those risks are, or to not eat meat, what that diet will require you to do. Like, we know, most vegans know that vitamin B12 is sort of an essential supplement. I would put creatine in that same bucket. If I were a vegan, there's no question I would be taking creatine. I mean, I take it anyway. I'm not a vegan because I know I'm excreting a little more than I'm taking in. I can feel the difference. But for sure, if you're a vegan, you're going to want to, at the very least, do some research on your own, talk to your physician or your functional medicine specialist, and I think you'll find that creatine will be a great addition to your diet.
Absolutely. Well, I want to make sure I'm respectful of your time because I know that you have a lot going on as well. This has been an incredible podcast. I hope listeners find it to be just super information savvy. A few things for listeners before we go. If you'd like to submit your own questions for the show, you can directly email questions@ifpodcast.com, or you can go to ifpodcast.com and you can submit questions there. You can follow us on Instagram. We are ifpodcast. I am at Cynthia_Thurlow_. Scott is at Longevity Protocol, and MD Logic is at MD Logic Health. The show notes for today's episode that will have a full transcript as well as links to everything that we've talked about will be at ifpodcast.com/episode292. You can get all the stuff that we like at ifpodcast.com/stuff we like. This has been wonderful, and we will see you next week. Scott, is there anything that you want to add before we go?
Well, yes, I would like to add that I have your updated information and the product by the time this airs, which I think is November 21st, that the creatine will be available for purchase on November 21st. So if you are not on the list already, you can order it. It should be able to be ordered through your site, Cynthia, on November 21st.
To get access to creatine and more information, listeners can go to CynthiaThurlow.com/creatine. Again, that's CynthiaThurlow.com/creatine. It's super exciting. I feel like this has been many months coming to fruition, and I can't wait to share with the listeners the next product we're going to be working on.
I can't wait either. This has been great. Thank you so much for having me, Cynthia.
Awesome. This has been so wonderful, and we will see you next week.
All right. Take care.
Thank you so much for listening to the Intermittent Fasting Podcast. Please remember, everything we discussed on this show does not constitute medical advice, and no patient-doctor relationship is formed. If you enjoyed the show, please consider writing a review on iTunes. We couldn't do this without our amazing team. Administration by Sharon Merriman. Editing by Podcast Doctors. Show notes and artwork by Brianna Joyner. Transcripts by Speech Docs. And original theme composed by Leland Cox and recomposed by Steve Saunders. See you next week.